Welcome back for another helping of oysters, clams, and cockles presented by Bolin Media. Please respect and enjoy the podcast. I am Brother Ross here with Brother Barrett, and we will be here as we always have been today to discuss
and always will be
today to discuss the season two finale of Foundation, Barrett.
Yeah.
And I want to know up front.
Yeah.
Big episode 8. Big penultimate episode 9.
Uh-huh.
How did you feel the finale did in terms of doing justice to the season and kind of give your feeling on the season on the whole without getting into specifics, because we'll obviously do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. It was, I sort of expected it to be what it was, which was very much like a wrap-up episode, like a cleanup episode.
Set up for season 3 kind of too. Yeah,
yeah. Like kind of like it explained a lot of things that we had just seen over the last two episodes. It was very expository in a lot of on a lot of that. Like there was a lot of like, well, this is what actually happened.
Yeah.
That there was a lot of just like putting a bow on things or tying up loose ends. It was very much a board clearing episode, as we will get into.
Yeah.
And so I kind of expected that, because the penultimate it felt like they did the thing where the penultimate episode was kind of like the big one. Now there were
the big climax.
The big climax. Now there were obviously some interesting reveals and stuff that that sets up for season 3. So I thought overall it was a fine episode, but
yeah.
It wasn't it didn't reach quite the heights of 8 and 9 from like a storytelling perspective. And then I'll just say, I will say up front, I'm feeling very strong, looking forward to season 3. I think the mule is a little too Terminator-ish for me.
A little bit, yeah.
It feels like a storyline that they just ripped from Terminator.
Yeah, and I mean, they give you that final scene of this episode where...
Yeah.
That really... If you felt that way before, then after that scene, you're really like,
it was
okay,
mostly that
is,
scene.
This is a Terminator villain.
That did it for me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll obviously get to that and we can touch on it more, but I'm not in
on the mule yet.
I'm not in on the mule yet.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think anybody would blame you for that. and as you said, we'll get into it, but it does feel very far off as well. Like, I'm not sure, like, should I not expect to have to deal with the mule till like season 6?
No. I think season 3 is the mule.
Really? Okay.
I think we're getting hit with the mule in season 3.
Wow.
Because we jump forward 152 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got a lot of thoughts about that, the final 10 minutes of the episode. So we'll just save that one for when we get there.
Well, let's just jump in then. Let's start out on Ignis.
That's Ignis.
Thank you. where Gale does the big like, and here's how what you saw in episode 9 happened.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
She explains
yeah,
how
she first. Sorry, go ahead.
No,
go
she
ahead.
Saved Harry Seldon before he ended up bludgeoning Tellum to death.
Yeah, yeah. No, the first 10 minutes is basically like, they're just like, ha ha, bet you want to know how this happened.
Yeah.
And then they just tell you and they show you.
Yeah. And they use Salvor. She's like, but I saw you drowned in the water, dead. And we learn that Gale, with Tellum's teaching, ironically, like she even says, like, Tellum taught me how to do some of this stuff. She controlled the minds of not just like, first of all, her and Harry are connected in a way we didn't really realize. And my takeaway on a rewatch was that Harry is actually a mentalic in some way. Like, remember Tellum was saying like he doesn't have any of those powers. Basically, he's a normie. He's useless to us.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like he may have, maybe he's just that smart.
Mm-hmm.
He like figured out somehow, because he was calling, like using unvoicing basically, while he was drowning, to call out to Gale, right? Or they're connected in a way that's just like very personal.
Right,
and
right.
She knew he was drowning, but she was also experiencing him drowning. And they show you like, it was kind of a weird back and forth.
They're like,
she was him, or like controlling his body somehow. Mm-hmm. Like she's in the water punching the guy that she called out to, the guard, to like, and she's like, I gave him a need, like tell him taught me.
Yeah.
He gets in the water, undoes Harry's chains, and then Harry/Gale kills him and then puts him where Harry was, and then she uses her mind control to make every single person on the island, including Tellum and Salvor, see Harry's body there when it's not Harry's body there.
Yeah, much in the way that when you're a fighter in the movie Pacific Rim or Pacific Rim 2, and you're inside a Jaeger.
Sure.
You are controlling that Jaeger with your own movements to fight the kaiju.
Right.
That's a lot like how Gale was operating here. She was inside Harry Seldon, having to do the movements, having to wrap her hands around to choke the guy out with the chain. You know, and that's exactly how it goes when you're inside of a Jaeger to fight a kaiju in the Pacific Rim film franchise.
A reference point that everyone can understand, of course, yes, from the the much respected Pacific Rim.
But I did. It was kind of interesting how they were like she was even like doing the walking for him, and so like she had to walk on a thing to walk on a thing. Like
he like climbed up the side of a cliff.
Yeah, yeah. So she had to like climb something else to like, do the climbing.
That was a little weird and confusing. Yeah.
So there are, as we mentioned, there are some explanations and some reveals throughout this episode, and at each one, this being the first one, I want to ask you if you thought it was earned or not.
This one was a little forced. It was like, they piped in the like really dramatic music over the top of this whole explanation so that you're kind of like getting jacked up with it. You're just like, oh yeah, okay, this is really positive. I'm really stoked on this. But I mean, I didn't feel like it probably was all the way earned.
I didn't either. It probably demands an episode 8 or 9, whichever one had more of this, rewatch. But it's like, yeah, they queued some of the things up for us. Like we know that like, faces can be changed. We know that that's like that illusion is one of the things that very powerful mentalics can do, right?
Well, even on Trantor, you can do that with this face changing technology that Brother Dawn and Queen Seraph use, right?
The face modulators or whatever they're calling them.
Yeah,
and we know that like the powerful mentalics can also kind of like get inside people's brains, and we know about the unvoicing. I just felt like maybe they could have. It's like because they wanted us to buy that Harry was dead and then hit us with the shocker of like, ha ha, he's back. He didn't die. So it's like they didn't give us the breadcrumbs along the way for us to even be able to think, wait, is something happening here? You know what I mean? And that leaves you the problem with kind of keeping all of those cards super close to your chest is that leaves you with the only option is to then get to the reveal and then have to explain what happened.
Like
to
you
us.
Said, very expository, right? Yeah. And it just ends up being a little unfulfilling, I would say. This was a rewatch for me, and I was less turned off by it in the second watch than I was in the first, but it was still this particular reveal and explanation doesn't leave you in awe. You're not like, wow, that was really, really cool the way they did that. It's more of like, they pulled the wool over our eyes, and that's kind of, it feels a little cheap. Not bad, just saying. I don't think it hit as hard as maybe it could have was it executed another way. Like, for instance, I mean, this part is the part that really rubbed me wrong. When they're in the little temple or whatever, like all talking about what's going to happen next.
Yeah, yeah.
And then all of a sudden this kid, Josiah, he's like, I got to tell you something. And he like walks over and picks up a gat and tries to shoot Gale because it turns out, I guess when Harry bludgeoned Soldier Boy Tellum to death, he like, you know, should have hit her one more time because she had like enough strength left to mind jump into this little boy.
Yeah, I think while it was while she was dying, she mind jumped.
And then this results in Salvor James Hardin having to save her mom's life by throwing herself in front of the bullet. I would add also murdering that small child with a knife, which felt unnecessary, but...
That was a choice. That was a weird choice. I agree with this as well. That was my exact thought. I was like, we got to murder this kid to get rid of Tellum now. Good, solid.
Now he's dead, but he wasn't scared, Barry.
He wasn't scared.
They tried to make you feel better about it.
Which I guess was supposed to make me feel better.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, good, it's fine then.
I can feel her fear, but not me. I'm not scared.
And I mean, the most important part of it, this takes out Salvor. She's dead. She's gone, right? And by the way, they...
First piece off the board here.
They really, weird way to do a funeral. They like sit her up.
Yeah.
I was like, how is she...
That Lara said the same thing.
What is she, tied to a stick? Yeah, but wouldn't you have to like tie her under the arms and the waist, like really stabilize her there? Because she's sitting up. It's just creepy.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
They burn her body. Yeah, so she's gone. And for the way we lose Salvor to be, oh, shit, this crazy Telum lady jumped into this little boy and controlled him to have him try to shoot Gale, felt, again, a little lame. Like, I was just like, oh, damn, dude. Like, all the shit we just went through, and then we lose Salvor with this weak nonsense?
Exactly, yeah. And especially, the math didn't math for me here, because I understand the importance of Harry Seldon and the story that's moving forward with him, but the thing is, we got another one of him. So yeah. It's like it's almost just from the scales balancing, right? It's like, okay, so you're kind of pumping us up with the reveal that Harry is alive and that they came up with this ruse and they got one over on Telum. And then the trade-off is that Salvor's dead.
Yeah.
Instead,
doesn't feel like the biggest win ever.
Right. So it's kind of it like, and I think that we're supposed to be affected by the loss of Salvor, but again, this first 15 minutes, everything that was happening on Ignis, it just was like, I felt a little bit of whiplash.
Yeah.
Because I just thought that some of this could have potentially been a little bit more foreshadowed or better set up, so that we weren't just kind of like just yanked by a chain around our ankles and like flipped upside down and been like, ha ha,
spanked on the ass. It was brutal. And I feel like we just came around on Salvor.
On Salvor, right.
And now she's gone. And look, I understand, like, she had to sacrifice herself, and there's meaning behind it too, right? Like, this shows
that,
that fate that Gale had envisioned, where Salvor is killed by the mule, it could be changed. Mm-hmm. And that gives them some say over, you know, or power over their futures or whatever. But, like, I never fully bought into that theory anyway. That, right. Like, once you've seen the vision of what's going to happen, like, there's no way to change it. It just seemed ridiculous to me. Because there's circumstances like this where she's going to save her mom. She's dead now. So,
well, and even when she's kind of discussing the hurt, the pain, the that feeling of like that you don't want to go on, or that this death can't be in vain and needs to mean something.
Right.
Harry even has that line where, like, and they're specifically talking about how to get back on their plan, and he has that line that's like, you know, there's a million different ways, or there's infinite ways to arrive to the same endpoint.
At an inevitable endpoint.
At an inevitability, exactly.
Yeah.
So it's like the mule is still for what they've shown us up until now is like still an inevitability.
Right.
So Salvor dying was like, it didn't happen the way that she envisioned it, but it doesn't seem like that necessarily changes that they're going to have to battle the mule.
The larger outcome.
The larger outcome.
Yeah.
Right.
No, definitely. I mean, Salvor won't die at the mule's hand, but the mule is still there to be dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
I did like the part where Harry gives, you know, they're talking about dealing with loss like that, mm-hmm. and how basically you have to weaponize the grief, right? Mm-hmm. Like how he never would have kept going with psychohistory if it wasn't for the loss of his wife, that he never would have gotten as far as he did or whatever, that he goes on because she can't, that kind of thing. And it was still interesting. It was emotional. It was cool. It wasn't, by all means, it was not bad,
mm-hmm.
but it did feel parts of this Ignis story, like you said, really jerked us around, threw mm-hmm. us for a loop, pulled the wool over our eyes, and for that reason, it didn't pay off quite as much as maybe it could have. Gale and Harry then decide, this was a little confusing, they decide they're going to, he's like, first he like puts her, he gives her a mission, he's like, we're gonna have to freeze you, or you're gonna go into cryosleep, and I'm gonna stay here, and I'm gonna train up these freaks over here, these metallics. I'm gonna be the one that teaches them, which again made me think like, okay, so maybe he does have a better understanding of metallics than we believed in the past. But she like talks him out of it. Basically, she's like, I can't do this by myself. She's like, I don't wanna.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, well, you're right. We'll not do my plan. And
we'll do your plan.
You and me can stay here together and train up this freak show.
Uh-huh.
But then also we watch them go into cryosleep.
But then they're immediately put into cryosleep.
And once a year for the next century, it sounds like the plan is that they will pop out of cryosleep to check in on things.
Uh-huh.
See how the freaks are doing, and then go back in. But they paint it up in a way that, like, that's basically Gale's function. Like, she even says, like, she's kind of like a goddess now, right? Like, she's already done this once. She went into cryo sleep, popped out, had to fix a bunch of shit, And now that's kind of the way she's going to work for, it sounds like, the rest of the story that we see unfold on this show. She's going to be in and out of cryosleep, and that's going to be how these time jumps function, too.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah. So this was another piece of the episode that I thought was a little clumsily handled, because I watched that scene and then I put on subtitles and I watched it again, and you have it exactly right. Harry's like, we're going to put you in cryosleep and then you'll be the sleeper and you'll pop out once a year to check in on things, but like, they'll think of you as a goddess, but you have to remember that you're just playing a part. Otherwise, you're lost.
Right.
She's like, no, like, then you're going to die and I'm going to be left all by myself to do this, and I can't do that. So we're not doing that. How about we both stay and we'll train them up for a year?
Okay.
And then essentially it's insinuated that they'll both do the cryo sleeper thing.
So we just missed the training for a year. They just show us the cryosleep.
But then they don't even give us like a little 1 year later thing. We're just boom, straight into the cryosleep.
That was the confusing part for me, though.
And I think we were supposed to get that they'd been trained, because like, while Salvor was being burned in effigy, like we have that blonde girl look over at her blonde friend, and she like gives a kind of weird furtive glance, and then again, when the cryopods are filling up and she goes around and she's like about to kneel with everybody else, she does like another weird look. And I don't know if that's supposed to be like, cause she's going to be a bad guy, or if she's kind of like the de facto leader on the
freak show
of the, of the Mentallics while they're in cryosleep, or what's happening there. But that was all just like, that all just snowballed really fast. And it was like, okay, well, what happened to that year that you were going to train them? And now you're both going into the cryosleep. But I think that we are jumping 150 years for season 3, because before we get to the mule, it says 152 years later.
Yeah.
And then they add that mule stinger on the end.
See, I didn't read the mule thing being in 152 years as that's where we're jumping to next season. I took it as like, this is a thing that happens in 152 years, like just like an ominous this is down the road deal.
Uh-huh.
But I guess it could go either way. Like, that could be where we pick up next season.
That's my guess, if I had to guess, because it's pretty much exactly what season 1 did.
Yeah.
Is it ends with a big cryosleep and we jump over 100 years. And like, because I don't think that would be pretty boring to just watch Gale pop in and out and be like, how are things going?
Well, okay, two things. First of all, yes, I think we needed like a 1980s style montage on Ignis to give us a feel for like, what did they train? Or did they just like change the plant? What the hell? Also, the blonde chick. Yeah, just hit us with some 80s tunes and give us a montage training scene like in Rocky, and we would have been fine. But then also the blonde chick that you keep referencing, when the Mentallics, when the freaks all come wandering out of the forest to the ship, and Harry's like, you know, forgive us if we don't trust you. We're not just going to open up the doors. You guys are a freak show.
And they're like, no, it's cool. Open them up.
They look back, though, to her.
Yeah. Okay.
When he's like, we're not going to open up, she's like four rows deep into the Mentallics, and they all turn around like, it's obvious you're the one who's going to have to explain to them. And so she walks up and she's like, no, you don't understand. You freed us.
Yeah, that's right.
We were under her mind control this whole time. Our own thoughts have not been our own this whole time since we arrived on Ignis, and now we're all good. And I was like, even from that moment, I was like, why her?
Uh-huh.
Nobody else had the ability to communicate that. She really has it down. We heard her say it earlier.
She's a great public speaker.
Yeah.
And everybody knows that about her.
Or it's supposed to be implied that she's an obvious leader of these people.
Yeah. I think that's probably it.
And so that's why, anyway, she does do a lot of those weird glances over the course of the rest of the episode where you're just like, what's with her?
Yep.
Okay, well, anyway, the second foundation has officially been established
here. It has. We do leave with at least one foundation here.
Yeah, which is huge. It's huge for us. Today's episode is brought to you by HelloFresh. With HelloFresh, you get farm-fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and seasonal recipes delivered right to your doorstep. Skip trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit. Say hello to a stress-less holiday season with the help of HelloFresh. Skip the grocery store and save time with easy, tasty recipes delivered to your door. Tis the season for giving and gathering, and with HelloFresh, it can also be the season of saving. Actually, save money this month with fresh recipes delivered cheaper than takeout. And with pre-portioned ingredients, you'll never waste money on excess food. Did you know that HelloFresh does more than just dinners? From easy breakfast to start your morning off right to 10-minute lunches or satisfying snacks, both adults and kids will love. HelloFresh has tasty choices for every mealtime occasion. And the best part, no grocery trip required. You all know I struggle in the kitchen, and that's why I love HelloFresh and how they make cooking easy and fast, even for an inexperienced chef like myself. Go to HelloFresh.com/OCCFree and use code OCCFree for free breakfast for life. That's one breakfast item per box while your subscription is active. That's free breakfast for life. Yeah, HelloFresh.com/OCCFree with code OCCFree. HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. So elsewhere, Brother Day has like a power trip or is consumed by bloodlust and is like, now we're not stopping with Terminus. Now we're going to go blow up the other seven planets.
All seven, yeah.
And then we're going to throw in...
Thespis?
No, Siwi or Seaweed.
Sewenna.
Sewenna, thank you.
Yeah. That's where they'd been trying to, you know, get their hooks in.
Yeah. And we're going to destroy them all. And Bel Rios refuses. He's like, no, I'm not going to do that. So Day relieves him of his duties. He's no longer captain of the ship. Brother Day becomes captain of the ship, and he tells the spacers, like, are you going to jump this thing, or do I have to kill everybody here, basically, right? But then it turns out Hober Mallow and the spacers actually did get a deal done. Like, Harry Seldon, he sent in a package that was enough to, like, satisfy the spacers or whatever. Anyway, the spacers are on board. They've turned. They no longer belong to Empire the way that Empire thinks they do, and the little trick they pull, which involves, excuse me, Hober Mallow's little arm thing,
mm-hmm.
whatever that was,
right.
It causes the entire Empire fleet to jump into itself.
Yeah.
It destroys the entire fleet.
Yes.
They all die.
Yeah.
And including all the spacers on board each of the crafts. They sacrifice themselves. And just another crazy emotional turn here,
mm-hmm.
big reveal that results in great action scenes. I want to say this. It's hard to pull off physical fight scenes in movies and TV shows, mm-hmm. right? Like some examples of when it's really well done are easy to pull because there's not that many. Like in Casino Royale and with Daniel Craig's James Bond, they did a great job.
Yeah.
And that pulled inspiration from Matt Damon in the Bourne films, mm-hmm. which did a great job.
Yeah.
But this shit here, it's almost like similar to those, very raw, but more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Like video game-esque in the way that like Brother Day is just like throwing haymakers on Bel Rios uh-huh. that make you like, ooh, god damn. Like it was anyway, I liked the fighting style that Foundation has pulled off and established here. Particularly in the scenes with Brother Day. We saw one earlier this season when he gets attacked by the Blind Angels. Lee Pace deserves a lot of credit for how he was able to pull off all the fight choreography that he did in this season.
I mean, we've said it a bunch of times in a variety of different ways, but he has a great physical presence.
Yeah.
Is a very solid performer.
Knows how to use that chest, man.
Sure does.
So him and Bel Rios fight. Bel Rios gets stuck in an airlock in ejected into space, and you're like, oh, that's a bummer. But then you see his face flash and turns into Brother Day's face. And you're like, wait, what? And they do another one of these, like, ha-ha! And the expository, like, giving you what just happened, you know, oh, well, we had the little chip, and we stuck it in his robe while I was fighting with him. And remember that scene earlier in the season where Hober Mallow does that with the guy he's about to get executed by the Titans prick?
Yeah, he swapped him.
Yeah, the old switcheroo. So
my favorite part about this was how it puts you into the other person's clothes.
Yes.
And Bel Rios, for the next half hour, is just strolling around in the in the mesh tank top that Brother Day was wearing.
Yeah, that part does not go unappreciated by me either. That was fantastic. And just watching him, like, he's like floating through space and yelling angrily.
Yeah, yeah. It's like
he's also freezing.
His teeth fall out.
Yeah, that was tight. A cool scene. Just a little annoying that once again they have to do, like, you watch this thing happen and then a couple of characters explain to you why it happened. I did feel like this one had enough setup. Right.
Yeah. It was also just like a little bit more of it wasn't so elaborate, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It was very...
Happens pretty quickly.
Very much just a very simple kind of switcheroo device that we've seen used before, and so we, like, totally get it.
We buy into it, yeah.
Now, what I think... Again, I feel like I'm picking nits here, but they did the switcheroo in a way that it took me like 30 seconds to be like, wait.
I think that was intentional.
What?
They didn't want it to be like so obvious.
Yeah.
They didn't give you a 10-second shot of Brother Day, like, you know, turning into Belrios turning into Brother Day.
Or one of them like hitting the switch or Belrios hitting the switch or whatever. But I was like, wait. Did he eject the inside?
Yeah. So, I mean, you do get a moment where you're like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. So but again, it was just like a little bit of, you know, it was like trickery.
Yeah.
And so I was, yeah, it was fine. It's a little trickery.
Now, the bummer is that there's a lack of payoff because you won. You know, they're just going to decant another Brother Day.
Yeah, but it was still, I still felt satisfied by knocking off a day.
Yeah. You know? Well, and that one was a real piece of shit.
It was a real piece of shit.
Fucking earrings.
He gets got, and yeah, it was, and I also thought that the more like, kind of like bigger picture thing here was you almost get the sense, right, that Demerzel knows that he's done for here on this ship.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, and that's one of the reasons why she just kind of ditches him, is because she's like, I'm pretty sure you're getting God here.
I mean, there was definitely a feeling of one way or the other. I don't know if necessarily she could have foreseen what would go down on the ship, but I do think she realized this guy is of no use to me. Yeah. He has no chance in growing as a person or whatever.
Then almost like regardless of what he does, of whether there's a mutiny on this ship or whether he goes and destroys seven more planets, like, this dude's, yeah, he's done for.
Yeah.
Like, he is politically dead, if not actually dead. And I'm going to have to decant three new people, basically.
Right.
And
yeah.
I think she leaves the, whatever that ship was called. Like,
I can't remember either.
Kind of knowing that she's decanting three new ones.
Well, at least the one. I guess probably the two, because we do find out that she did get a signal basically from back on Trantor when Brother Dusk and Rue from Cloud Dominion entered that room and got into that prison. So that is the reason. Like, we were wondering, like, what is it that gets her to abandon Brother Day? And there was a signal that she received in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
The bad news about this ship that they just ejected Brother Day from is that everyone on it is still going to die.
Yeah.
And when you hear this, I questioned it at first because earlier, like literally 10 minutes earlier, Belrios is like, everyone on this ship is going to die. But I can save one of us. And so Hober Mallow goes and uses that opportunity to forcefully, like, he's not asking. Mm-hmm. Save Brother Constant's life, right? Mm-hmm. So I felt like there was like, I was waiting for another loophole. Like, we're not going to kill Belrios and Hober Mallow. These are great heroes that we just built up, right? I was looking forward to like Belrios being the general on the rebel side of things,
right,
and like Hober Mallow being like the wild card renegade that everybody can rally behind.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Well, now they're both toast. And they drink that wine that Hober Mallow has been saving that wasn't stored properly, so it tastes like Becky's arsehole, which is, that's a bummer, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was a cool scene with those two guys, and they did a really good job of giving you a few more moments to enjoy these two characters that you've seen developed over the course of season two.
Yep.
I will say one of the things about this show that is, I get a kind of a fear of mine, is that we'll never really get the opportunity to see anybody flourish aside from Gale and Harry Seldon, because everybody else is going to be a sacrifice.
Yeah, it's Gale, Harry Seldon, Day, and Demerzel. I think we can go into season three being pretty confident that those are the stalwarts of the series. And again, the fact that we do lose Belrios and Hober Marshmallow, R.I.P. also is what is giving me that thought that, like, okay, once again, we're kind of, because they're so, you know, just like we're clearing the board of these characters that are heroes and that we've developed, that also makes me think, like, okay, that, again, this is why it's okay that they're doing the 150-year jump or you can flip that. We can kill. We can lose these heroes because we're jumping 150 years. So
they'd be dead anyway.
So they'd be dead anyway. And like, and we've got these. They've sent for the four characters that I've just named. We've got all these. The conditions are set for them to be constants.
Right.
They can either cryosleep forever, essentially, and exist in all of these different moments in time, or they're robots or they're clones.
Well, there's one other character that you're forgetting, and her very name is indicative of her potential constant presence on the show moving forward.
Point. Yeah, yeah.
Brother Constant. Who gets shot out in that, whatever that is, trash chute or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And then she gets rescued by the vault. Which is also a spaceship, it turns out.
Yes, yes, yes.
And not only is it a spaceship, it turns out every single person that was on Terminus that we thought was dead, including Polly Verisov, which I completely forgot about, by the way, is on this thing. And it's a very, like, heaven. Like, this is heaven. It's like an afterlife type of vibe in there where, you know, I guess who comes out first? She gets sucked in.
Seldon comes out first.
Harry comes out and she, like, falls to her knees.
And then Polly. And then he shows her Polly.
Yeah.
And then
Polly first, maybe.
Oh, yeah, Polly first.
Yeah, and then Harry, and then everybody.
Her two dads. Yeah.
Glaywin comes out, that was kind of a bummer.
My guy Glaywin, but just because Bel Rios died.
And who he died thinking Glaywin was dead. Mm-hmm. He's actually not dead. And so everybody walks out from Terminus that, you know, we obviously were upset, thinking like, damn, that whole planet died? That's a huge bummer. But then the camera pans upward in the vault, and it turns out the vault is like a 100-story-tall hotel, and every balcony that we look up and see is also occupied by people who are looking down on us.
Yeah.
And I'm still, as we sit here, not really clear on who the fuck all of those people are.
Okay, it's a good question. One that, and I think this was supposed to be vague, but remember when we were kind of shooting earlier in season two, we were seeing that the development of Terminus over the last 100-some-odd years.
Yeah.
Like, so in the town and at the base and all that type of stuff, like, we were obviously seeing people that we kind of became familiar with. But I think that there were a shitload of people on Terminus, well beyond that kind of, like, core group.
Okay, yeah.
So one option is that
it's just all the other citizens.
It's just all the other citizens of Terminus and, like, that main group that we kind of saw was kind of the main group that was, like, the people that we had kind of known and whose faces were familiar. But I also don't hate the idea that something else kind of weird is, like, something else kind of supernatural is going on here, and this is a bunch of other people that the vault has somehow saved.
My wife was, her theory is that was all of the people on the giant ship that they crashed into Terminus.
Hmm.
But the thing for me it gets a little tricky because it's like, I can buy, like, the vault was right there.
Right.
I get how Polly was able to be saved by the vault.
Yeah.
I get how all the other people who were in the encampment right there were able to be saved. Yep. I don't get, like, I mean, physically, you have to enter this thing.
Uh-huh.
I don't get how it would have been able to, like, the vault, like, was shot up to the ship real quick and, like, picked up all the people off of it before it crashed into the planet type of thing. You know what I'm saying?
My guess is that
it's just the planet of Terminus that was saved.
I think it's just the planet of Terminus that is saved, or some other, you know, even kind of, like, more, like, far out idea.
Sure. Because it gets a little crazy because it's like, we're watching all the Terminus people walk into this room with the light behind them, right? Again, like, very, like, heaven-esque. And they all seem like Glaywin is like, whoa, this is wild. like, it's not like they've been there and Harry's already explained to them, like, what they're doing and where they are and what's happened.
Yeah.
So how did all those other fuckers get all the way up top and like around the balcony? Because they seemed very sure of themselves. Like, that's right. We've been here for a while. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway, the vibes in the vault are completely chaotic at this point. Like, I have no idea what is going on in there. And they definitely give you this, like, Harry Seldon is God, and this is heaven, and it's all very spiritual, and look at the light. Like, they want you to have those types of thoughts going in your mind.
Yeah.
And it makes me wonder, longer term, like, what we're dealing with there, and obviously we'll find out more next season, but that was a hell of a a brain buster for me. I was just like, whoa, what?
Yeah, and now this is one where I felt was earned. I liked
this was a cool payoff.
I liked this twist. It was a cool payoff because for as long as we've known the vault and we've gotten little explanations beforehand, we've gotten the scene where Harry is like, it's like flying through the sun and like all of its things are like shifting and moving around and creating this thing that it is. And we've gotten many explanations about how the vault is just matter and he can make it whatever it wants to be. And the vault is a lot bigger than you might think it is. And it's got this special power where it cannot let people close to it. But then it splits open and then it pops Harry up in different places.
It's also a weapon somehow.
It's a weapon. He can light people on fire from there. Like basically... Like
it's also an Etch-a-Sketch.
This monolith is anything it wants to be, including heaven, including including a spaceship, including a space that's essentially infinite in size.
Yeah. And so also a toilet for Hober.
For Hober, yeah, you got to think that he just left that as an homage to our lost hero.
They put it in a glass case. Anybody can go look at his turd.
They bronzed it.
Yeah.
So you know, even though it obviously defies everything that we know about physics and time and space, I can, because of everything I know, because I know that this Harry especially is already kind of like this godlike figure, I'm okay with buying the fact that when the Invictus crashes in, like the vault uses its special powers, sucks everybody up and just flies off into space. And now Brother Constant gets to join the party. Yeah, and obviously big TBD on what this thing does next, but you got to think it's going to plop down somewhere.
I would think so. It plopped down before, you know? So, or fuck it. At this point, why can't the vault just fly around and save all the innocent people and they can all live in this endless space that is the vault and, like, Harry can keep creating more matter or whatever? I don't know. Anyway, magical place, the vault.
Not one that we're going to completely
wrap our heads around today, no. But that was a very, very cool scene and kind of an emotional one where you're just like, oh, fuck yeah. Especially having just experienced the loss of Belrios and Hober, you're kind of like, we needed a win. You know what I mean? Like, I needed something to make me feel like this is still really like overwhelmingly positive in its message, this show. And that scene achieved that. Any other thoughts on the vault?
Imagine, wouldn't it be something if her name was Hope?
Yeah,
that would be something.
Except it's not.
But it's not.
I don't understand why she had to.
Yeah, she really burned his ass.
God
on that
damn,
one.
Man! Like, why? She could have just left that as like a positive thing for him to walk away and die
or
with.
Or then told him her real name after she.
I guess, you know, that's like their thing, though.
Yeah.
And now they have it forever. Now they have it forever. In death, yeah. Even.
Yes.
So one of the other things we see at the opening of the episode is Demerzel walking in and confronting Brother Dusk and his Cloud Dominion concubine, Rue.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a very, very well-executed, well-acted, and cool scene where she's explaining, like, her love for Cleon, but also how she's skeptical about that love because it's programmed.
Because she knows it's programmed, yeah.
How she hates him because she'll never know if it's one or the other, if she would have felt that way without the programming, that type of thing, whether or not a sentient AI can have feeling or no love, or if it's all just programming. It also calls into question how much of humanity is programmed, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it definitely is holding a mirror up to humanity. And with regard to the programming there, Brother Dusk even says, none of us were ever free. We were fools to think we could be. You get almost like Brother Dusk seemed to pretty quickly resign himself to his fate. Like, once she walked in, he starts to like almost put up a fight, and then he's like, what am I doing? Yeah. She's just going to break all of our... We're dead
right
here.
Right.
And then it gets emotional where he's like, he tells her... It's almost like he's like, we are the same. And I forgive you because I understand.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you never had a choice. I never had a choice. This is what we were programmed to be. There was no other way around it. We would have never been free. You have to do what you have to do. But it's also easier said than done for her. Easier to do than just say for him, because he's an old fucking man.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. He would have probably had to have done that weird Brother Midnight walk any
pretty
day
soon.
Now, right?
Yeah,
so I felt most bad for Rue.
For Rue.
She's like,
Rue.
Damn, what, she got caught up in there.
Yeah.
They also leave us with it in a way that like makes you question, like, well, maybe Demerzel had a change of heart Because we don't, she just walks towards them, and then we don't see what happens. She's walking out. She does the finger thing to, like, shoot the bars back up on the prison, but, like, why would you need the prison to be activated if there's nobody in it?
Because that's how it was in the Cleon was, Cleon OG was just, like, back there traipsing around.
Okay,
with his ghost self, but, like, I don't know, he's like...
Well, she seemed really shook.
Yeah.
Like, Demerzel... All the questions we have about her and her ability to feel or otherwise as a robot is getting heavy.
No, and again, this is something that we saw a little bit of, right? Like when Day makes her go kill the the politician on when he does the after he does the spiral walk.
Oh yeah.
She obviously doesn't want to do that,
right?
She is,
but she has to.
But she has to do that.
She can't not
she
obey
can't
the order.
Not do that, right?
Right.
So it's that she's put in that supposition where she knows what she's going to do. She knows that she has to protect the dynasty. She knows she has to do what's right, an order from Day that fulfills all those same things. Like, she's got to do that. So I think here was a very similar thing. Like, she is touched by what Brother Dusk tells her, expressing his love for her, expressing that those sentiments about how they are the same, how none of them are free.
His understanding
of all that. And I think that is absolutely, like, registering with her emotionally. But at the same time, this is what she has to do.
It's not possible for her to do anything else.
What she's programmed to do. Much in the same way that she tells them, like, even if you could reprogram me. Like,
if you tried,
I'd kill you.
Because it's in my programming to kill anyone who tries to change my programming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I thought this was all really, really well done. We've given a ton of credit to Jared Harris and Lee Pace for their kind of, like, for their big kind of antagonist, protagonist, kind of big main roles. But Terrence Mann, Brother Dusk, and what's our actor's name who plays Demerzel?
Laura Byrne. B-I-R-N.
She's gotten a lot of time to shine this season.
Yeah.
And this scene especially was really great from her.
I mean, she may have been the MVP of this season, honestly, when it's all said and done. And her character is, like, so intentionally difficult to read. Because let's just get what happens here. It turns out she was behind the Blind Angel's assassination attempt.
Yep.
That assassination attempt was never meant to succeed.
Right.
It was all a part of her casting doubt on Queen Sarith, and which inevitably leads to, in this episode, her pinning the assassination attempt on Queen Sarith. There's irrefutable proof that she's put into her bank records or whatever, and she tells Brother Dawn that, who is like, what the hell, doesn't really believe her, and then he sees the green mark on her neck, which that's one thing I forgot. Brother Dusk, when he's given her the whole emotional spiel, it's so he can get close to her so that he can put that mark on her neck. And if you sat there and you're like, where'd he get the green pigment? He's the pigment guy.
Yeah, he's the pigment guy.
He has the pigment in his pocket or whatever, you know? He's the paint guy, so just give him that. But cool moment there. The one thing about it that I felt was a little lame was, like, you see the mark and you're like, oh, shit, and they show you the flash to the to the artwork with the mark, and so that you remember the story if you're a moron, which is helpful to me as a moron.
Yeah.
But then she walks off and immediately checks herself in a mirror and sees it and doesn't go and murder Brother Dawn immediately. Like, it registers for her. You watch her go, oh, that little shit was playing me. But then she just turns and, like, goes about her business. Like, it just, that was a little, I struggled to rationalize that. Huh. But,
okay. I'm not sure that she, I wasn't sure if she was fully putting that together. She was like, "Wait, he put that there. Did it mean something? Did I just tip him off?" And maybe Day at that point was already like, I also get the sense that she's not really supposed to kill these guys just, like, right out in the open.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Got to keep up some level of image.
Yeah. So
I kept finding myself questioning, like, how much can she get away with in front of a bunch of people? Because doesn't she just go in and wipe all their memories all willy-nilly anyway?
That is a fair point.
But then there must be some kind of a process there, right? Like, just to throw out a hypothetical, let's say right there she flips out, sprints, snaps Dawn's neck.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody that's out there is like, hey, what the hell, lady? Does she have to, like, get them to come with her to an office lined up one by one to erase their memories? Or is everyone's memory accessible on some fucking master computer that she's got control of? There's a lot of questions around the memory altering stuff too.
Well, here, let me. I'll just let's keep pulling this thread though. Obviously, we're getting the kind of the reveal about how the Sarah thing is unfolding and what she meant to do to keep this marriage from happening. Right, she was going to cast doubt on Sarah. Maybe that would end it if Day thought that she had sent the blind angels, and then if that didn't pan out, then she was just going to manufacture the evidence to pin it on her incontrovertibly, and then they were going to, you know, she's tried
executed,
and executed, yeah. and bingo, bingo, bongo. Why did she agree to killing Sarah's family in the first place? Because that was all part. That was the origin of the ruse here to get her
right
into the fold, to be able to marry her and essentially like gain this access to Cloud Dominion in the first place.
Great
right?
question.
You know what I mean? So she could have just not done that, and then she wouldn't have ever come here and tried to marry Day.
Yeah,
it's a lot of work. To let something get this far, that you know you're not going to let happen in the first place, because
right.
like that's kind of what we talked about all season, is that this was the ending the Cleonic dynasty and having this marriage with a real human heir, like that was never going to fly for her.
Yeah, like, it didn't seem like Demerzel would allow that.
Yeah, that was antithetical to her directive in the first place.
No, I like your question. That's a good one. If anybody has an answer for that, I'd like to hear it on Patreon this week, because that is, I don't, now, if you go further back and you look at the assassination of all of the family on Cloud Dominion that left Queen Sereth in a position to even come over and do this in the first place, Demerzel was responsible for that.
Again,
was that just her carrying out an order
right,
that she couldn't refuse?
And I feel, right, it's like this gray area of where, like, she does have to follow the orders from Day, but then she obviously has all the power in the world to manufacture a bunch of bullshit to then,
yeah.
like, to kind of, to guide them or steer them in a different direction. So it's like, yeah, it just seems like they're, yeah, that there were other options.
Well, let's ask the last big question. So we get the scene where we watch Demerzel decant all three of them, mm-hmm. brothers, Dawn, Day, and Dusk, at the same time. She even tells them, I've never had to do this before. This is some crazy shit here, boys. And it's an incredible scene because you see how robotic they are coming out of those mm-hmm. fish tanks, right? They're like, we are Empire, like all together. It's mm-hmm. very choreographed, and their steps, the way they walk out is very, you know, almost
yeah,
like...
Yeah. Uniform, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just a really cool scene, but... She's decanting all three of them because she just killed Dusk
mm-hmm.
because he found her little prison.
Mm-hmm.
Day was shot out of an airlock into space by Bel Rios. And Dawn has escaped
yeah.
with Queen Sereth.
Yeah.
So now there are two active and living Dawns. Mm-hmm. One of them is God knows where. Guess we'll find out in mm-hmm. season three. And it's one of the reasons I'm not sure we can just make a 150-year time jump, because I'm like, what
okay.
the hell happens with Dawn and Sereth?
That's a good point. Didn't think about that one.
And
now did I?
It also feels like aren't people going to start catching on to this, like how this all works?
Mm-hmm.
Are the people aware of the decanting? Or is that like a, I guess that is something they're all aware of.
I don't know if it is.
There was a lot to ponder here in the end, because
yes, I have a lot to ponder.
Exactly, because we got two of one of them out there. Yeah. My read at one point in the episode, I was like, oh shit, that was the last brother Day. They're never going to be able to have another Day decanted because everybody just saw this one get shot out of the airlock.
Mm-hmm.
This is before I realized, like, well, everyone on the ship is going to die anyway, but. I don't even know if that would, like, I'm wondering if a brother Day is out in public saying hello to the people and somebody runs up and assassinates him, is everybody like, oh God, we lost brother Day? Or are they like, they'll decant another one and just go about their business? You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So anyway, we got three new ones though.
I also had a bit of a hard time getting a full read on the conversation between an escaping brother Dawn and Demerzel, because she's
right.
like, I'm going to have to hunt you down. And he's like, but what if you didn't?
I love you.
Yeah.
You
were my mom, and we have a baby, and all this baby needs is to be loved. Doesn't need a rule. And so, like, does he convince her? Does he talk her into, like, just letting them flee?
Is
like,
she capable of being convinced? That's the thing
right,
I end up walking
right.
away from season two
yeah,
with. Like,
yeah,
does
yeah.
it matter at all what anyone says
to
this
her.
Thing?
Yeah.
because she has the programming that guides her every move.
Right.
Or is Brother Don completely wasting his breath and emotion on her?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I tend to lean toward the latter.
Yeah. That's what it seems like.
That she is a villain, whether she wants to be or not, right? Like, she's kind of our big bad, and it doesn't matter how much she doesn't want to be.
Yeah.
Because she also has the Prime Radiant.
She does. Now she has the Prime Radiant, but she can't really understand it, so not sure how much it's doing for
her. Well, not all of it yet, right? She can't understand all of it, but it does give you this... I ended up with this glimmer of hope, like, ooh, Demerzel's going to be, like, she's going to, like, turn and be, like, like one of the good guys. Because she looks at it, and she's like, they're like, do you understand this? And she's like, not all of it yet, but I do see many wonderful things on the horizon. And I'm like, well, is she looking at all of the crises and saying, like, oh, these are going to be tight. A lot of people we're going to kill. I'm a fucking robot. I love killing people. Or is she looking at it and going, oh, good, eventually this whole empire thing is going to cease to exist and I'll be free.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
There's anything can happen, baby. It's Foundation. Yeah. Nobody's even who they look like anymore. It just you can just do a swapperoo or a magic mind-blowing fucking make people look like other people. It's just, it's chaos.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was a solid season. Before I get your thoughts on the season on the whole, today's episode is also brought to you by Athletic Greens. As we go hurtling toward 2024, like many of you, I'm trying to make sure I'm feeling my best and living my best life. That's where Athletic Greens comes in. Why take a bunch of different things when you can just mix one scoop of Athletic Greens powder in water once a day? Their flagship product, AG1, was designed with ease in mind so you can live healthier and better without having to do too much. It's the healthiest thing you can do in under a minute. AG1. Has been a part of millions of mornings since 2010. In my time using it, I noticed an increase in energy, mood support, and better overall digestion. The goal of Athletic Greens is to make it easier for you to live your best life. If you want better gut health, immune system support, hate taking a bunch of different pills and vitamins, and you want something that tastes great, AG1 has you covered. If you're looking for an easier way to take supplements, Athletic Greens is giving you a free one-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. Just go to athleticgreens.com/dragon. That's athleticgreens.com/dragon to support our show and your body at the same time. athleticgreens.com/dragon.
Dragon.
Final thoughts on season 2.
Yeah. I liked it. I think that run of, what was it? It was 6, 7, 8, 9. Really like cemented this as a very solid season. It did a lot of cool things. One of the things that I'd always read or that I read about Foundation when we started watching this show is about how the book is like really more of like a series of vignettes. And so they've obviously had to create a lot of the story, which is something that we've talked about a little bit, that like this whole Cleonic dynasty doesn't even really exist in the book. Right.
Right.
But I can kind of see what the show is doing with these little pop-ins almost. And so the seasons are not quite, it's not really an anthology series, but it almost is in a way. Because you get the feeling that we're jumping to a new milestone potentially every season. Now, you make a great point that we did leave a loose end here at the end with Day and Sereth, and we can't really jump forward 150 some odd years and still cover that. So that will be interesting that's a good note and does make me question what they're going to do for season 3.
Well, frankly, they could just open season 3 with the scene of Demerzel murdering both of them,
yes,
and we'd
could.
Be like, and that's that. You know what I mean? I don't. There's a lot of ways for them to wrap shit up in this show.
Yeah, there is. I thought really good stuff with Demerzel, who we just mentioned as the possible MVP of this season. It was great getting her story. I find that whole thing very fascinating and kind of can't wait to see where that goes. Right now that's certainly what I'm finding more interesting than the, Ignis storyline.
Storyline, and
getting ready for combat with, the mule.
Yeah.
But that's okay. I've got faith in the show to do cool things and, give us good performances and tell a fun sci-fi story that I think is worth, It bears fruit. It's worth discussing. You know what I mean? Like it's got a lot of stuff to think about and to talk about, and that always makes for I think an enjoyable show, especially for us and covering one on this podcast.
There's a lot of depth on Foundation. I mean, they do get into a lot of different stuff about life and being a person and what that means, and you know, some of the same questions that Westworld asks with regard to AI mm-hmm. and sentience and what life entails, right? So I thoroughly enjoyed this season. Like, season one had me in a place where I was really interested, right? I was curious to see what they could do with mm-hmm. this story. Season two was a big elevation for me. It felt like a big step in the right direction. And some of the awkward points early on where you're like, oh, this is just the Star Wars characters they've right. introduced here. There's more color to them and personality, yeah, and yeah, it's getting yeah. a little Star Wars-y. I thought that all panned out and played worked out in the end. Mm-hmm. I loved Tober Mallow. I thought he was a great addition.
Yep.
I like Brother Constant and Polly Verisoff, and what they're doing there with those characters is going to be. I have no idea what they're doing with them at this point, but I liked what they did with them in season two. Mm-hmm. And Lee Pace as Brother Day continues to be like one of the high points. Demerzel elevated herself to one of the high points in this. I'm with you. At this point, I'm wondering, will Foundation ever be able to achieve me caring about Harry Seldon and the Foundation side of it as much as I care about the Empire side of it? Yeah. Because the Empire side of it and Demerzel and all of the potential there is far and away the 1A story for me. A1, right? And then, like, Foundation sometimes gets up close. I didn't care for Ignis all that much.
Yeah.
Soldier Boy Tellum wasn't my fave. But all in all, loved the season, thought it was awesome. The last three episodes really solidified it as like one of my favorite things I watched this year. And it was it's something to look forward to with season three.
I think one of the and just almost something that we didn't even really cover with this finale that probably, you know, bears throwing into the bucket of things to ponder. But there's supposed to be, we talked about it all season, the characters on the show did. Like, this was all heading towards a war between Empire and Foundation / Terminus / whoever else.
Right.
So that's another thing that we have to weigh with kind of thinking about what this show is going to do it next. Like, when does that battle start happening? And is that, how does that, like, again, like, I'm not, that's another reason why the mule seems less important to me, is because, like, well, that's just like this outside villain guy that you're throwing at me.
Right.
Where, like, really what I care much more about is the battle between
Empire versus Foundation.
Like, that's kind of seems like the big storyline. This mule thing is just, like, something you got to deal with.
Yeah, a lot of what I read painted it up as Harry won the second crisis without even firing a shot mm-hmm. by convincing the spacers to join them.
Okay.
But that still doesn't change what you're saying, because Harry's entire premise was Empire will crumble. Mm-hmm. That will lead to a dark age, and we are trying to shorten that dark age.
Right.
So is there still going to be a war between Empire and Foundation, or does Empire crumble on its own accord, or what the hell? Like, we didn't make a ton of progress in that realm.
Right, right.
And it will be interesting to see what happens moving forward there, because I'm with you. I mean, it's part of the reason I can't get on board with the mule.
And I mean, maybe the mule in his little monologue there at the end, where he's going to, like, even if I have to burn everything to do it.
Yeah.
Like, is he going to send us into the Dark Ages? Is he kind of that fulcrum that the seesaw tips and, like,
I mean,
he burns it all down, and that's what sends him to the Dark Ages?
Yeah. Well, it's occurring to me as you're talking that part of the problem with the mule is that no piece of me believes that the mule wins.
Right.
Like, I don't think this show is going to end and they're like, oh, we didn't avoid it. The Dark Ages are going to be long and hard. You know what I mean? Like, there's...
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm like, ah, fuck the mule. Back to Empire. Let's see what they're up to.
Yeah.
These freaks. Yeah, so I don't know, man. But season two gave us a lot to chew on.
Mm-hmm.
And now we at least we've got both foundations, right? One of them just happens to be in a heavenly vault. And the other one is made up of a bunch of metallics on Ignis and being led by two people who are mostly sleeping.
Right.
So there you go. I wanted to say before we get out of here today, I finished a rewatch of True Detective Season 3. Obviously, we will be covering True Detective Season 4 starting in January. Season 3 of True Detective is substantially better than Season 2. It does definitely return to the Season 1 formula and with, you know, the interviews and the flashbacks and all that. But I remember not loving Season 3 when I watched it live. I didn't love it this time, but I really, really liked it. Like, it was really well done, well acted. There are some slow points, but overall, the crime they're solving is spooky and cool and you know, in a bad way. The two detectives you're dealing with, you really enjoy and love their chemistry, and the story overall is great. I thought it was like a nice reminder of what True Detective can be before they get into season four, which is going to maybe be a totally different vibe. We don't really know because the guy who did seasons 1 through 3, Nick Pizzolatto, is out.
Sure.
But yeah, if you're doing a rewatch like me, or you're scared to do a rewatch, I highly recommend it. Season 1, one of the best things ever made. Season 2, so bad that it's actually entertaining to watch the lines get delivered. And then Season 3, a nice return to form that's, you know, it's not Season 1, but it's good TV. Like, if it was on Netflix or some shit, people would be losing their minds about how good it was. Mm-hmm. So yeah, True Detective Season 4 coming in January. Can't wait to talk about that. Next week, I believe, or whatever, next week? What's next week? Not Christmas yet, right?
No, not yet.
We'll be doing our end of year stuff, I assume?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Some of that?
Okay.
But we'll be back later this week on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles when we drop an ad-free episode further discussing and digesting the season finale of Foundation Season 2, as well as talking about some of the other things we've been watching with the old Mollusk Militia and Clam Fam. They're supporting us there for just $5 a month in exchange for all of the ad-free content we have on Patreon. Again, our show would not exist without the support of the Clam Fam and Mollusk Militia on Patreon. And when you subscribe today and ensure our podcast will live long into the future, you'll immediately gain access to our entire backlog of ad-free exclusive episodes, including our entire companion podcast for all 86 episodes of The Sopranos, as well as our bonus coverage of House of the Dragon Season 1, Succession, The White Lotus, The Last of Us, and Silo. We also have a movie club on there with 16 different movies that Barrett and I watched and then did an hour-long podcast about. So go to patreon.com/oystersclamscockles today and join over 1,000 other listeners in support of our show to hear us discuss all the stuff we talk about this upcoming episode. And we'd appreciate it if you'd also support our sponsors from today's show. Links and codes for today's sponsors in the description of this episode. For more from me, Ross Bolin, check out the Ross Bolin podcast wherever podcasts are played. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at WRBolin. Barrett, where can people follow you?
Follow me on Instagram at Barrett Dudley to get all my life updates.
Go to bolinmedia.com/shop to grab yourself some merch. Thanks for being here today. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Thanks for taking on Foundation Season 2 with us. Until next time, please respect and enjoy the podcast.